Welcome to the Diary of a Change Manager, the podcast that makes change management easy.
For today, I'm talking to Michelle Payne. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me, Sam. Thank you.
You are so welcome. So what we wanted to talk about today was how we reframe change management into change leadership. What's your experience of that, Michelle?
Well, I think they're two very different things. So change management is this application of activities and theory, a framework, call it, that allows organizations to implement a new thing, taking them from point A to point B, the new. Whereas change leadership is about, I see it as individuals or a group of individuals that inspire people. They set the strategy, they set the vision, and then they have the energy to take that forward.
Okay, so what are those key characteristics, do you think, that makes a good leader into a great change leader?
So I've been really fortunate to work with many leaders that are driving change in their organisations. And I see energy, passion, those that can build coalitions with different parts of the organisation. Those are also empathetic as well. Also some risk takers. Always great to see a risk taker in a change leader.
Yeah. So why are risk takers so important, Michelle? And have you got any examples of where you've been given permission to take some risks in a program?
So that's always an honour when you work with a leader and you push them into places that perhaps they're not comfortable with, but you build that trust and I've been really lucky. One example I could tell you about, Sam, is giant puzzles outside. So when we try and implement a new process, nothing bores an audience more than somebody putting up a Visio map of a process with lots of boxes. I mean, it's guaranteed to send your audience asleep. So giant puzzles, which you can throw a creative whiz to, and get people outside, get people building giant puzzles so that they themselves have got hands-on experience of what that new process is.
Mm.
So you're getting that process map in there.
I guess you're using muscle memory there as well, aren't you?
True. Yes, absolutely. So I was very lucky in that particular instance in the outside where this particular change leader that I was working with gave me the permission to build large giant puzzles. He also allowed me to, we were implementing sort of cloud technology in this particular instance.
Yeah.
And he allowed me to get a load of old on-prem kit, put it in a wheelbarrow and wheel it down the center of a conference room to say that the day of on-prem was dead and we were embracing the cloud.
Wow. So, I'd love to have seen that.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a good one.
I'm sure
got some real engagement with that one. We did. But it was about what resonated with the audience at that time. They could connect to that. It certainly stuck. We've also had another opportunity to work, and this was during COVID when lots of people had lots of anxiety and lots was going on in people's lives. And
yeah,
change programs still happen when lots is going around in the world, etc. And we were given the green light to create our own TV infotainment show.
Wow.
Yeah, because sometimes an email just doesn't do it. So
I still don't think it doesn't do it, does it?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure we'll get onto that topic later.
We will.
But yeah, I've been really lucky to work with some really brave, brave people.
Yeah. It feels to me as if you're talking about human connections here.
Yes.
Yeah, so talk me through that, Michelle. Why does that matter?
So when I think of change leaders, the one sort of unique factor that a successful change leader has is the ability to put people first.
Yeah.
So it's one of our values.
Absolutely, yeah.
It must.
It must.
Yes. Yeah. But it is true in change programs, in big transformations, where you need to put people first. Because you can build technology, you can design great operating models, but it's your people that are going to make the change happen.
Yeah.
And ignore them at your peril is my advice. It's the people that will engineer and make that change a reality that allows these leaders to achieve their objectives, their goals and their visions. Yeah. And not all change is bad, right?
No.
It can be for good outcomes. So that I will always be banging the drum about putting people first.
Yeah.
Thinking about the different types of audiences that you do, be that generational within your organization, from boomers to Gen X. You know, there's so many different ways that we can reach out and touch people.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that you talk about those characteristics, Michelle, because when I think about the change leaders in our organization, people like yourself, many of those qualities and those characteristics that you've just described are they're the characteristics that we're looking for in our people too.
Yeah, I mean, it's what allows us to connect with our customers really well.
Yeah.
And I talked about building trust.
Yeah.
Change leaders also need support. And that's where we come in as that support team. So we're doing the change management function of those activities, but we're there as people, not only supporting the change leader, but also promoting and being an advocate for the audiences that you're touching. So we sort of, when you get a really, really good connection, you're bouncing ideas off your change leader, your sponsor, and we give them options as well, because they can go many different ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have a lovely privileged position to work alongside some really great people.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate, very, very fortunate. So come on, give us some examples. We've heard about the wheelbarrow. I love that one. And the great big puzzles, you know.
Yeah, and more examples of great people that you've worked with in the past that have really shown that bravery and that risk taking. So yeah, I'm thinking of an individual in mind at the moment. Tenacity as well, resilience. You know, because change programs, big transformation programs, don't always go according to plan.
No.
And you have to be brave. You have to sometimes do things that don't make you feel comfortable. And that's where me and my team come in. So sometimes we talk about, you know, not wanting to communicate bad news. But, you know, honesty is always a great policy in big programs. And keep talking to your customers, talking to your audiences.
Yeah.
That's what my advice would be.
So I want to wheel back now. You talked just a little bit, just a moment ago, about something that I know is a real pet hate of yours. So come on, resistance, Michelle. Resistance.
Oh, resistance.
Everyone loves a bit of resistance management. Oh, so yeah. Come on, let's talk about
it. Yeah, so you'll go into an organization and they'll feel really good about themselves because they're employing change managers and the change management team are coming and
they know everything.
We've got it. And, oh, what are you going to do about resistance? What are you going to do about resistance?
Yeah.
Now, we debate this within our own consultancy.
We do.
And we've got different thoughts and approaches. And I think it's good to have that healthier debate. It's also good to have options that we go to our customers with. Well, I'm not a fan of the term resistance management as an activity. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, you're always going to have naysayers. Haters are always going to hate. Yep. So you've got that pocket of people that are going to object to the change. There's many reasons why. You've got the people that are literally sitting in the middle on the fence sitters. So they're just looking to the left. They're looking to the right. They're going, which way should we go? And then you've got your pioneers, your advocates. Now, I say, do you want to spend time and resource on the naysayers, the cynics, let's call them?
Yeah.
Or do you want to put your energy into getting that early adoption, identifying those green shoots of change? And do you want to start to see those benefits, those outcomes that change leader is gunning for? I say, put your energy into those early adopters, those pioneers, let's call them, that can start to create this empirical evidence. These guys at the end, they want hard evidence to know that this is a good thing.
Yeah, they do.
Put your energy into them.
Yeah.
And I say, ignore them.
That's controversial, right?
I know it's controversial, but we've got to get good success stories and change. We've got to get that early on in a program because that creates momentum. so that I can start to get my fence sitters coming towards the new beginning, the new entity, the new thing.
Yeah. We talked earlier, Michelle, didn't we, about what is it about setting that vision right from the start, and how can we get those middle people, you know, the ones that were sitting on the fence, but they're now moving towards what that change actually looks like. Isn't it important that we start to actually be able to articulate that vision early on?
Well, there's I've seen different ways of, you know, releasing a vision, you know, announcing the change. And I've seen good examples and I've seen horrific examples. So you want to create momentum.
Yeah.
You want to create momentum. You want to create adoption. We want people implementing this new thing, you know, behaving in the new way that was set out by that leader. So you can make a big bang announcement, which may cause shock and awe.
Yeah.
Or you could start to bring in people like us that will craft the language, the narrative around your vision. And we can start to drop seeds of what that vision may look like by setting up maybe focus groups and letting that news out gradually. So there's lots of different ways that organizations want to approach their change. How does that leader want to approach their change? We give people the choice. And I think that it's good that we have healthy debate within our own consultancy about whether we ignore the cynics. But it's about giving that change leader options and choices. Now, we're very good because we're people at landing into organizations and understanding the culture, you know, whether you've got a very highly intelligent, science-focused organization, or you've got a very liberal, open organization. And we can sort of feel the temperature and the culture of those organizations. But ultimately, that change leader knows their organization best.
Well, of course they do.
Yeah. So we give them the choices about the different ways of implementing change. And really, it's up to them to seek advice from us and for us to give them the best advice, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Michelle, when you start in a new organization and you've landed there, you don't really have many connections in there, they've engaged with us, how do you make a start?
Often people don't know what a change manager is, Sam. They know that you're a management consultant of some kind, but when you actually refine it down to say, well, I'm a change management consultant, they're like, what's change management? And so rather than reciting a chapter out of an ADKAR model or a Kotter book,
yeah.
I remember talking to an individual about how I saw change management, and I was moving my hands a lot because I talk a lot with my hands. And I said it was about building a grassroots connection of people. And we do that by human interaction, picking up the phone, knocking on doors. We start to build this grassroots network at the bottom. Of course, we've got our change leader, who's our sponsor, and they're at the top. And as my hands were doing this, I said, it's kind of like a sandwich. Think of it as a hamburger. And so this is where my idea about change management is a hamburger came from. So we've got our bottom bun of communities, of champions. We've got our senior leadership as the top bun. And then in the middle is those change activities. It's those areas of specialism that we are expert in, be it communication, be it training, be it engagement, facilitation. That's your burger. That's your salad, that's your tomato, and you squash it into the bun. Could be smothered in cheese. Call that the love that we give people, because I genuinely believe that we do show the love to people. And that is your change hamburger.
That's brilliant. I love it, Michelle. Thank you so much for explaining that to me. I've wondered for quite a while what it actually
I'll make you one day.
So, Michelle, tell me about the biggest change challenge you've ever faced.
It's quite a lot, Sam. I'm not going to lie.
I can imagine. Yeah.
They're all challenges. But I think in recent history, we were asked to help an organization that were merging two large internal departments under a single leader. We were given 8 days from being instructed to be ready for launch, the announcement. Now, as a team, we pulled together. We worked really hard with our customer day and night to meet that deadline. But for me, I would say that's not necessarily putting your people first. 8 days is not enough, a long time to brief management teams, line managers that didn't really know about the change. So that was a shock and awe situation, I'd say. Something that I wouldn't advocate. I think often in transformation programs, be they technology, be they people, organizations tend to hang on to the fact that they've bought a new shiny thing. Or they want a new shiny organization model and they'll focus on that. They'll then go into the next phase of, well, how are we going to bring that to reality? So they'll start building a team around it. And then the last thing they think about is, oh, I guess we better tell the people. So wouldn't it be better just to have a bit more time to build that people narrative and bring them into that sort of conversation much, much earlier? And that's where we definitely help. We can do it in 8 days, but I'd prefer a bit more.
I think we'd rather not, wouldn't we? We'd rather not.
But we did it, hey? We did.
Yeah, we did. And I remember the thanks and the, I think, the shock and awe from the customer, actually, that we managed to achieve that for them. So that was a really good job. Very, very well done. So congratulations on that one.
Thanks, Sam.
So one of the things we also talked about earlier was the importance of what we really call sort of modern, sort of high quality communication and engagement. Why is that so important?
So communication. What is communication? And when we start working with an organization, you know, it could be an announcement on their intranet. But we have a really, really great team of brilliant writers who've come up with some amazing narratives. I always like to start with a narrative and working with a change leader to say, let's get these thoughts on paper. And ideally, it's on one side of A4. It's never much more.
Shouldn't be much more than that, should it? Who can concentrate on that?
And that is the they call it the boilerplate. And we work with organizations to get their leadership team to sign up to that very short, snappy statement about what the thing is that we're doing, what we're setting out for. And once everybody's on that page, then we can start to create those different communications, those different engagements. Because communication isn't an email and it's not a post on the internet. Communication is you and I here today, together. It's that small interaction that that leader may have in the corridor. It's communication. It's what that change leader's management team are saying. And our role is to make sure that everybody is on message. We're all saying the same thing. We don't conflict, and that it flows, that it makes sense, and it's easy to understand. It's simple, clear language.
And communication has to be two-way, right? So we can land what we think is a great message, but if we're not getting any feedback to make sure that that message is landing, has it even landed?
That's a really good point, Sam, because in that modern communication, what we're really looking for is those channels that allow people in, say, different time zones to be part of that communication. So tools like Viva Engage, for example, is I'm such a fan. It's a great tool so that you can build communities, virtual communities that become self-sustaining.
And that is the holy grail, right?
Isn't it?
Self-sustaining communities.
So we've done that. We've gone in and we've built communities, virtual communities in organizations where they poo-hooed the use of such tools. And I was proud to sort of walk out of that building knowing that that community, self-sustaining, running, huge engagement on it, when it was thought it could never be done. And so useful in diversely spread organizations to employ tools such as that.
Makes me think about champions, Michelle. And how champions might use those self-sustaining groups to sort of keep that message alive, even when the program's over.
Yeah. not only do they keep it alive, but they're solving problems themselves.
And it's powerful, isn't it?
For sure, for sure. And that's why, you know, I've always said a good change manager shouldn't stay, right? No. We should leave the building because we go in there, we support that change leader, we engage them in some crazy things.
Crazy things.
We have fun, right? We have fun. But we should certainly leave the building afterwards. Yeah. But with those communities in place, those skills in place, and that new reality being the new normal.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier, weren't we, about the difference between champions and influencers.
Yeah.
They're all on that same line, aren't they? Everyone that's sort of pushing that change is on the line. But you've got the senior influencers, and then you've got the someone that you go to when you just need some help in remembering how to make that process work or what button to press next.
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, change leaders, they are ultimate influencer, aren't they?
Of course,
yeah. And ideally, they should be touching the sort of their senior management team, influencing them.
Yeah.
And then down to your sort of what I call your grassroots, people that are feet on the ground, that are living and breathing that change. And also expert at it.
Yeah.
So if you can build that community and maybe concentrate and focus a lot of attention on that group in the early days, and you're always thinking about what is the intrinsic motivator in these people. Mm-hmm. Generally, they want to be recognized for their knowledge.
Yeah.
That motivates them. And when you can start to spot those individuals, and me, my team, our team, because we're people, we can identify and think, hey, that person, that could be a great champion.
Yeah.
So you build them, you give them the tools, you give them the skills, you shower them with love, and you give them the tools that allow them to keep going, be that a channel or Viva Engage.
Shall we start thinking about how we celebrate success in our programs?
Yeah. So everyone wants to see the green shoots of change.
Yeah.
Management wants to see the green shoots of change.
Yeah.
And I think that when we start to see that, it's important to take time that when we celebrate it, it's genuine, it's authentic, and that we use that celebratory moment and it comes from that audience.
Yeah.
It's should never be about the leader achieving the great outcome. It's all about the individuals, the groups of individuals and teams that have made that change a reality. My advice is don't go too early. Be absolutely sure that that is a green shoot of change. But yes, I had one particular customer I can remember who wanted an elephant and a brass band going through the auditorium. That was his challenge to me. I said, I don't think I can do an elephant and a brass band.
A real elephant.
Oh, my goodness. But, you know, it is about throwing parties and it is about, you know, getting the pizzas delivered.
Yeah.
It's small things like that that create momentum.
Ultimately, change happens one person at a time, doesn't it?
One person at a time. Yeah, definitely. It's a really good way to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. You can catch our other expert talks and useful change resources by visiting theinformteam.com/podcast. Until next time.